ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Paula Levine, I called you here today because I wanted to talk about sports gambling, because it's something that none of us at this point, fans, media, athletes, coaches, it's something that we cannot escape. Right? It is everywhere. But the thing I haven't heard nearly as much about is the stuff that used to be synonymous with the fear of this industry. The corruption, the leaking of inside information, game fixing. Whose job is it now to monitor that stuff?
Well, that's a really good question. There are a number of entities who have the ability to do it, but who's actually responsible is it's a little bit murky in terms of how it gets carried out. So let me give you an example of how this can work. So during a recent college football season, there was a particular bowl game that caught the attention of a company called US Integrity, which is based in Las Vegas. And US Integrity is a for-profit company, and it has contracts with sports books and leagues and conferences and colleges and others to monitor and report suspicious sports gambling activity. Now, the company declined to name the game, the school, the state, or the exact date on which this happened. But US Integrity President Matthew Holt described how it went down like this.
There was a bowl game last year where one team opened up a significant favorite. That line started dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping, and we saw tens of millions of dollars come in overnight. We sent out alerts. Well, the next morning, their offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, starting running back, starting receiver, were going to miss due to COVID. And that information wasn't made public, yet it got in the hands of bettors the night before from an equipment manager. Literally within an hour, there's this huge network of people and you could see tens of millions of dollars wagered.
There were no criminal charges filed. And one of the many issues here is that it wasn't clear whether such activity was illegal. There wasn't enough to build a case without proving intent. But Holt said the equipment manager was fired. So in a sense, the system worked, but how far did it go? And if you think it in general terms, like one way in which regulations and laws work is through deterrence, right? So if there's no public reckoning on something like this, can you argue the system is really working to the degree it could? And also keep in mind, like this is just one slice of where wrongdoers can take advantage of the system. Leaking inside information is a big problem, but when we talk about integrity monitoring, we're talking about match fixing and game manipulation and paying off officials and extorting athletes or coaches and catching other, what we call bad actors. And Pablo, you'd be a fool to think that more people aren't trying to game the system on a daily basis.
We are now 4 years into the age of legalized sports betting, this brave new world where point spreads are normalized and gambling promos are admittedly omnipresent. And one especially enormous question remains. Why does this industry still feel kinda lawless? So today, Paula Levine investigates how we got here, how regulation in this industry actually works, and why what we don't know and what we never hear about might be the most shocking revelation of all. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, April 13th. This is ESPN Daily. Paula, I get that we are in this new age, that modern sports gambling is here to stay. It's here to pay some of us a lot of money. It's here to lose money for some of us. But it wasn't always this way, right? In America, at least. How did all of this start?
In May of 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that a 1992 law called the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, often referred to as PASPA, which had prohibited states from allowing sports gambling, was unconstitutional and a violation of states' rights. And while this didn't legalize sports gambling, it did leave it up to the states to decide whether they wanted to individually allow sports gambling within their jurisdiction. And talking to people in the industry, like, they anticipated that states would kind of slowly go through this process and it would take a number of years to get to this. But actually, COVID, in a sense, has been credited with moving this along a lot faster, because a number of states, as they were losing tax revenue due to COVID budget constraints, restrictions, and so forth, were looking for, well, what can we do to increase our coffers? And many of them were like, hey, we have this option with sports gambling. Let's do it. You know, people are at home. They're looking for something to do. But, you know, the expansion has gone, I think, a lot faster than even the industry experts thought it would.
So the regulation side, Paula, has clearly lagged, as this industry has mushroomed incredibly quickly to the point where now more than 30 states are allowing sports betting. But I also want to talk about the thing that was holding all of this back for so long, because why did the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act even come to be in the first place?
Well, PASPA was also known as the Bradley Act, after former New Jersey Senator and NBA Hall of Famer Bill Bradley. And it's important to have that tied to the league, because when it was passed, Bradley stressed it was needed to safeguard the integrity of sports. And at the time, the leagues and the NCAA were really opposed to allowing gambling, because they believed that it would lead to integrity issues, the things that we're talking about, you know, athletes being compromised and game fixing and all of this. And so that was the opposition at the time. Now, since the legalization has been opened, you've seen a major shift, because there is a belief, and I believe it's true, that allowing people to wager on sports increases their engagement.
And I also get the idea that, like, hey, adults should make adult decisions. These are things that we can opt into if we so choose, or not if we so choose. Like, the moralizing aspect, Paula, like, I get why we're sort of evolving to a more modern perspective. But what we're here to talk about really is the question of integrity, which is a real concern. Like, how is that being protected now in the aftermath of PAPSA being rolled back?
So still in 2018, not long after PASPA was struck down, there was congressional legislation brought forth by Republican Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah and Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer from New York that would have set federal standards for a number of aspects of legalized gambling, but it would have included aspects of integrity monitoring, which is what we're talking about. That was posed by the industry, saying that they didn't need these federal standards, and it just died in committee. Although I spoke to someone with Senator Schumer's office who said that the senator still believes that there's a need for this, that without a Republican co-sponsor, there's really no impetus right now to bring that up, considering everything else that's going on in the world and with Congress. So we're kind of stuck right now with what we have, which is every state able to bring forth its own laws. In one state, you know, it could be illegal for you as a member of a team or an employee for a college athletic department to be wagering, but in another state, it's not. You know, in some states, it could possibly be illegal to make use of non-public information to bet. In other states, it's not. It's kind of all over the map.
Yeah, state laws clearly vary so widely, Paula. So coming up, I want to know how this industry has quietly been dealing with the people who break all of those rules.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So these private companies, these free market solutions to regulation in this context, I do want to understand better, Paula, what U.S. Integrity, as an example, as a case study here, what they actually do. I mean, you got to spend time with them in person, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we went down to their headquarters near Las Vegas and got to see their operation, spent time with them. They were at the WCC conference championship game. They actually had people there, you know, doing analysis on site.
The West Coast Conference, yes, the conference that has Gonzaga in it.
Yes, absolutely. So U.S. Integrity is a 14-person private company. Their clients include sports books, colleges, leagues, conferences like the West Coast Conference. And then they also provide information to, and they call them partners instead of clients, with state regulators, even federal regulators, the FBI, to monitor betting lines and report suspicious behavior. And U.S. Integrity is unique in that they are the only for-profit company in the space that doesn't engage in other gambling-related activities, such as selling data feeds to sports books or providing other services within the gambling industry like Sportradar and Genius Sports do. And like two of their biggest U.S. clients are like FanDuel and DraftKings, two names that lots of people know.
So FanDuel and DraftKings are their clients in this case. They're working with, they're being paid by these sports gambling companies. And how exactly are they doing their job? Like what kind of tools, what kinds of methods are they employing to find behavior that should be flagged?
So what they do, they analyze raw betting data. They look at athlete performance data. They look at what's happening within the game in real time, but also historically. They look at officiating patterns. They're also monitoring social media feeds because they're looking for when information comes out and who has it. All of this information that they can get about what's happening in the betting space, what's happening on the field or on the court or in competition, what's happening with how information is trafficking at that same time. And they look for correlations between unusual patterns. And they will, if they see some sort of correlation, they see something that stands out like an outlier or an anomaly, they will send an alert to their clients. Now, in some cases, those alerts turn out to be just random happenstance, right? But in other cases, if they then follow that up with, well, can we look at who the bettors were who were, you know, placing these bets? And is there a tie between those bettors and any of the individuals involved in any of these competitions? You know, is there anything we can see on social media that leads us to figure out like why this may have happened? One thing that they talk about when they talk about looking at officials and referees, they're, you know, they'll say like, we're probably one of the best advocates for people who complain about officials, because if you're complaining about someone making a particular call in a particular game that changed the outcome, U.S. Integrity actually has that particular official's history of calls through years. They can say, look, you know, yeah, this person is not good in this area, but he's consistently not good in this area. So if you screwed up your game, right. It doesn't mean that that's part of his pattern.
Sometimes there is a verifiable honesty to the alleged incompetence.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like if he's incompetent across the board, then it's probably just your bad luck on that day and not that he or she was being, paid off for that game. Now, they don't always find out everything that's happened, but, they have a pretty good idea if some sort of internal action has been taken.
But Paula, in some way, that's sort of old school, right? The idea of complaining about corrupt officials is stuff that fans and people have been theorizing about for years and years and years now. What specifically in this modern sports gambling landscape are the integrity monitors most triggered by?
Well, there are a couple things, specifically in talking to Matthew Holt with U.S. Integrity, where he sees a real evolution in not just sports betting, but then also in the possible corruption. One of them is what is micro betting, right? So this is betting on plays within a game.
What we're seeing is the next evolution of sports betting is micro betting. I just want to bet on this player how many rebounds he'll get, or will this player hit a home run, or will this pitcher get 5 strike? And those are much more easy to convince athletes to manipulate him because it doesn't necessarily impact who's going to win the game, how hard they should perform, and they're easier to manipulate.
So if you are someone who is trying to manipulate the game, and let's say you have access to an athlete, it's easier to persuade that athlete to throw some minor thing or whatever it is, as long as that athlete can feel, well, I'm going to do this and it's really not going to sink my team.
Right, right. There's an individual sort of negotiation in terms of the morality there. I'm not affecting the outcome of the game. It's just the game within the game that I'm playing with.
Right. This is an area where leagues, teams, anyone who's putting on these events thinks that allowing this type of betting will encourage people to be more engaged. But at the same time, these are the type of things that could be more appealing to individuals trying to fix something. There's also a concern from Holt's perspective about the aspect now that athletes can make money. And he talks about the tie-in with gambling and the name, image, likeness permissions.
Right.
He gave this great example.
So say you have like Tony's Pizza Shop and Bob Front, and they're paying a student athlete $100,000 in a NIL deal. But if we can actually see through geolocation processes that those bets are actually taking place at that location, boy, this might not be a legitimate NIL case and rather a front for potential game manipulation and match fixing.
And that's out of the recognition that it's easier to compromise a college athlete than a pro athlete, and also to get access to a local college athlete than someone in a different state.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I spoke to a regulator in Iowa, which is new to sports betting. And that was one of the things that they put in their regulations. They do not allow individual wagers on Iowa athletes, on any game involving an Iowan athlete. They erred on the side of wanting to protect the athletes and protect the integrity of their competitions.
But on the other hand, Paula, like geography, the local aspect of this is also kind of quaint, right? Like I presume like, a savvy gambler could go to a different state and sort of invest in that way. But it feels like this also raises this question about how hard it is to prove this stuff.
Right. So the monitoring, what the companies like U.S. Integrity do, I think, honestly, they do it pretty well. The problem is that they are the information providers. They do not have the ability to take action, and they're very clear on that.
We don't make arrests, we don't issue subpoenas, but we are at the literal epicenter. Regulators, operators, leagues, teams, universities, all funneling data in and getting reports out.
It's up to the FBI. It's up to the tribal gaming associations. Like, they're the ones who have to then sort of put the hammer down and finish the investigation and actually punish the people who are cheating or trying to throw the games.
What you're explaining here is that the U.S. integrities of the world, this genre of private company that does this sort of investigation, they're in the business of information and data. Like, they're basically tattling.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even their ability to investigate, it's up to their client how much more information they want to provide or how they want to cooperate with finding out who may be involved. And they provide all of this information and they say, hey, we think this person or this incident might be worth looking into, but they can't take action. They don't arrest anyone. And they also can't publicize something when it happens. I mean, yeah, the tattletale squad would be a good way to put it. Yes.
Paul, you had alluded to just a bit ago, the client's motivations in this. If you're a DraftKings, if you're a FanDuel, if you're one of these companies contracting, if you're one of these companies hiring a U.S. integrity, like, what is their motivation in terms of getting to the bottom of what's really happening here? Because obviously this is a billion-dollar industry now.
Right. Well, keep in mind that their clients also include some of the professional leagues like the NBA and the colleges and the conferences. And while their clients want to know the source because they want to stop it, especially the sports books if they're losing money or the teams if they have some, you know, ne'er-do-well employee, they don't necessarily want to take that case public. They don't necessarily want it to end up in a criminal charge or enforcement action because there is a public relations harm to that.
I mean, that's a fascinating dynamic, Paula, that tension between a league, a gambling company being victimized by the corruption that we're talking about. They're the ones who are suffering, who are having the wrong being done to them. It's their business, but also this idea that they don't want to call too much attention to the wrongs being done because they don't want to point to all the crime happening in this neighborhood, allegedly. They don't want to scare people off in the PR sense, even while they themselves are losing out on it.
Right. On one hand, the sports books and the leagues and the colleges and the conferences want to talk about integrity monitoring because they want people to believe that, hey, we're doing all of these things to make sure that you are watching a fair match and that you are betting in a fair market. But then at the same time, when something does go awry or when somebody has been caught doing something wrong or there has been, you know, a game compromised, they don't want people to know because then that draws speculation into, gosh, how bad is this really?
Yeah, that question, Paula, of how bad is this really? I also want to know the answer to that, especially as the regulation of this entire industry is concerned. After the break.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Well, when do the feds get involved, Paula? We haven't really seen sweeping federal regulation that hits sports betting in its sort of new legalized form, how has the government then gotten involved in a meaningful way as all of these concerns are clearly growing quietly sort of in the background?
So in 2018, directly in response to the expected growth in the state-by-state legalized gambling, the FBI did start its Integrity in Sports and Gaming Program Task Force. Now, the FBI does have a long history of getting involved in cases involving sports gambling and bribery and corruption. The FBI was a law enforcement agency that investigated former NBA referee Tim Donaghy, who pleaded guilty in 2007 to conspiracy to engage in wire fraud and transmitting wagering information through interstate commerce in a match-fixing scandal.
Yes, the most infamous example of referee corruption that we've seen really in certainly in basketball and arguably in pro sports.
And it's kind of a mouthful because it does sort of speak to the variety of laws that the FBI has to rely on to do this, because they're not so specific as, you know, I think some in the industry would want them to be. But since 2018, there really hasn't been a lot that has risen to the FBI's involvement, or at least as far as we know.
So, Paula, I understand that like a U.S. Integrity is an information-driven company. That's their business. What would they like to see change, though, like legally speaking, across all of these states, the 30 of them that allow legal sports gambling?
Well, when talking to Matthew Holt with U.S. Integrity, he talks about how it is so difficult for them to operate in all of these different states and all of these different rules, and how he would like to see some national standards. I don't know that he goes to the point of saying regulation, but at least some uniformity with the rules and laws across the board that get to defining exactly what is illegal. Then he draws this comparison to the financial services world. And he says, you know, look, they sent Martha Stewart to jail for insider trading. Essentially, when you're talking about the issue of sharing non-public information, he's like, you know, essentially that's what this is. And we don't have laws set up to deal with this.
And so is there momentum, Paula, towards improvement of these standards, like on a state-by-state basis? Who's leading the way on this?
I talked to regulators in 4 or 5 different states. One of them was in Tennessee. And Tennessee has been described to me as sort of above average when it comes to enacting laws and regulations to help prevent opportunities for manipulation. One thing that they do, which a lot of other states do as well, is they limit or ban certain types of bets, such as in-play bets in college sports, to help prevent people from trying to bribe or exploit athletes, officials, or staff. They have a requirement that sportsbooks have to be a member of an integrity monitoring association and are required to share any suspicious activity with the Tennessee Sports Wagering Advisory Council, which does have enforcement authority within 24 hours. And they also have a law that makes it a criminal misdemeanor to share, quote, non-public information for the purpose of wagering on a sporting event. That's one example of a state that has been seen as taking some proactive action toward addressing these issues.
And in terms of what these state agencies would need to really do this job seriously and effectively, do they have the resources even to handle all of these potential investigations?
Well, Pablo, it really depends on the state. And it's interesting when you look at all of these different regulatory agencies. Some of them are in states that have been offering casino gambling or horse racing or greyhound racing for years. And so they have some regulatory structure and they have a staff. But then there are others who are coming at this brand new, and it's a little bit more difficult for them. One of the people I talked to was Harold Wafer. He's the event wagering and fantasy sports administrator with the Arizona Department of Gaming. And when he filled his job 10 months ago, he was the first person to have that job. And he was coming over from having been a sportsbook operator. He's now the regulator. what he says is what a lot of people in his position say, that he relies on integrity monitors and the sports books to find that suspicious activity. Like, he doesn't have people who are actually doing that. And when I asked him, I said, let's say there is match fixing. What exactly are the laws under which someone would be prosecuted? You know, he said, look, the legislation for this is like this thick. And he raises his hand a few inches off the table. He's like, I'd have to go look it up. These laws in these states, especially like Arizona, where it also involves tribal gaming, which is a whole other set of regulations to get into. There's a lot there and it can be pretty complex.
So we have these varying degrees of resources. We have these varying understandings of what actually needs to be enforced. We have varying incentives for anybody to even identify how big the problem is, Paula. All of which reminds me that, like, we did get a big headline very recently about an athlete getting punished for betting on games. I mean, Calvin Ridley, the Falcons wide receiver, their best wide receiver, just got suspended by the NFL for the entirety of the 2022 season because he bet on NFL games while he was away from the team. And that was huge news, in part because of Ridley's own celebrity in football. But we haven't heard much about any cases otherwise involving any of the red flags that you've mentioned today. And I'm curious why you think that would be.
I think I'm glad you mentioned the Ridley case, because that obviously drew a lot of people's attention to the integrity aspect of sports betting. I think the one thing that sets that apart is, you know, there's no evidence that there was any attempt at doing anything to manipulate the game or the outcome. I mean, this was a case where someone who was betting shouldn't be betting. And companies like US Integrity and others do get involved in detecting those. And those are somewhat of a separate issue to what we've been talking about in terms of enforcement agencies finding people who shouldn't be betting. It's not just NFL players. It's people who may be underage or have other compromises like that.
A category of people who just are not allowed to place bets beyond the idea of manipulation of the games they're even betting on.
Yeah, they are finding those, like those are happening. But when you're talking specifically about integrity monitoring and anything that is to manipulate the game or manipulate betting, there have not been cases that have come up that, you know, that have made any news. And so as part of this, I reached out to regulators in all states that started offering sports wagering after May 2018. Get a number, a sense of the number of cases they faced involving suspicious betting behavior, and not a single one was able to or willing to point to an enforcement action or criminal charge that was made in response to an integrity concern raised with a U.S. sporting event. There was one state, Louisiana, where someone said that they had an active case but wouldn't talk about it, you know, because it was still pending. But that doesn't mean that there weren't penalties or punishments imposed by a university or a conference or a sports association or professional league. The New Jersey Division of Gaming Enforcement, which has always been reticent to hand over records, declined to provide any reports to us. Although I did get an email where there was a notation that when information results in public-facing action, it is, you know, disseminated by the agency. And the link took me to a story, an ESPN story, about potential match fixing in Ukrainian table tennis that reporter David Purdom and I had done, which I thought was great, because the concern that they took action on was one that we had brought to their attention by an investigation
that we had done
2 months earlier.
Paula, I just love that at the bottom of this investigation, you tumbled all the way down the rabbit hole on how these places are supposed to really take all of this seriously. And you realize that the most effective investigator on this subject was you all along.
I mean, it was quite flattering, but somewhat disconcerting.
So, Paula, like, the question then is, where does all of this leave us? I mean, you've painted a portrait that is a little disconcerting, but this is our new normal in many ways. So where does this go from here?
One place where I think there's some agreement, I hope, is that there just needs to be more transparency about where this information goes and how it can result in enforcement action or criminal charges, something that gives the public an idea that it's not just all going into a black hole.
Paula Levine, on behalf of our listeners and clearly also various state governments, thank you, as always, for your reporting.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.